Let me give you a little bit of bio on Damon and Melody, just so you'll know a little bit more about who they are. Susan and I were able to spend a week with them last summer at a camp up in northern New Mexico, and that's kind of where we really got to know each other. And as we shared our families together, we talked about the possibilities of doing some things like this. And so that's the genesis of what happened here. Damon and Melody work together, as I mentioned, at the Hope Church of Christ. His bachelor's and MDiv are both from ACU, so he's a local boy. Melody is an LPC who works with families and kids. She has a bachelor's in missions from ACU and a master's in education from Hardin-Simmons. They love to spend time with others, helping people and improving their primary relationships. They have 17 children.
No.
Oh, I'm sorry, 7. It seems like 17 sometimes, probably.
They're all moving.
They're all, that's right.
Can't count them.
They have 7 children, Grant, who's 15, Madeline, who's 14, Jackson, who's 12, Logan, who's 11, Savannah, who's 6, Barrett, who's 4, and Quentin, who's 20 months. And so they definitely have a perspective on what we're talking about. Damon, thank you for your words today. I told you earlier it was very appropriate, and this idea of becoming a living legacy is what we're talking about today. So when I say leaving a legacy, what does that mean for you guys? What would you say? I don't know. Whoever wants to start can go with that.
Okay. Well, when you initially think legacy, you think leaving some grand thing behind. So if I had a bunch of money, I have 7 children. I do not have a bunch of money. But if I did and I could leave this huge pile of money to them that they could then do something great with it or whatever, that could be a legacy. And I think we usually think in those kind of terms, but we like to think about legacy in terms of what are the small things that happen every day that I'm leaving behind to my children. In other words, legacy could be like this great vacation you go on when you go to the Grand Canyon and you think, wow, that's a memory we have. And it is a great memory. But what truly shapes us is the stuff that happens on a day-to-day basis. So for me, I would think, so I have 5 sons. And so I would love for my legacy to be in 30 years, for their wives to say, man, these guys are great husbands. I wondered where they learned how to do that. Hmm. And I would hope that my sons would say, well, I watched my dad. And that's a legacy I could leave that is greater than a big pile of cash or something like that.
Amelia, you may have a little different perspective from the counseling side of things. what would you say about leaving a legacy?
Well, I would say it's really... it's really easy for some of us to do this family thing and do it well. I fall into that category. I can think back generations. I've got a legacy. I've got a really wonderful legacy. If some of you know Kay Istry well, then you know what my grandmothers are like, both of them. So you can understand why it's really easy for me to smile at my children and to get over it when we get upset, or to have a kind word, because that's a legacy that got passed down to me. Not that I have that perfectly, but I think I have it easier than some. So what I like to think about in terms of legacy is that all of us are trying to make that even easier for those next generations, to look for the positive in our kids, or to search out the really important things that we're trying to teach, as opposed to just getting busy in the everyday things that we're trying to do. So for a lot of us, what we're excited about doing is talking about how we can build on what we have, whether that comes really easy to us or whether that's a little bit more of a struggle, and make that easier for the generations who come after us.
Good, thank you. I know that this is a part of what your ministry is that you do. Mm-hmm. Can y'all talk a little bit about what you do in your ministry? Well, the website is what, just to remind everybody?
DamonandMelody.com.
There you go, DamonandMelody.com.
That sounds right. That's who we are, right?
You can go to their website, you can kind of see some of this. Talk a little bit about your ministry and how it fits in with the idea of legacy.
Well, one of the things that we, for, I don't know how long ago this was, 7 or 8 years ago, got involved in was how can we, I grew up in church. I mentioned that earlier. And I always heard great sermons, great lessons about how you should love your wife, or you should love your kids, or you should love your neighbor, and all those things. And they were great, and they really motivated me to do those things. But what we found was maybe a piece that was sometimes lacking, at least in our lives, was, but then how? What do you do? Like, I should love my wife. Like, I just gave a sermon about how you should love your wife. I didn't give a lot of specifics. But what are some tools, what are some real things, some very on-the-ground, practical ways you can, you know, do those things? So that's kind of, we have taught, I don't know, numbers aren't important, but we taught tons of classes to either couples getting married or married couples or families. We even do a seminar that has your whole family together, all sitting at the table together. And we talk about, okay, what are some tools we can use in our family to help us love one another better?
So an example on that would just be a really basic listening skill that some of us might have been listened to really well growing up. So it makes a lot of sense to us to really silently listen and take in and to really listen to what the other person is saying and maybe even kind of rephrase that back, make sure we got it right. And some of us go, huh? You're supposed to do what? You're supposed to be thinking about what the other person's saying? I thought when someone was talking, you were supposed to be working on your rebuttal. So some of the specific tools that we talk about are, how do you get past that? If that's your natural bent to be thinking of your side, even as your partner's speaking, we teach kind of some specific skills about how you might do that differently.
So let's get real specific about today. Okay. Let's talk about the specific nature of leaving a legacy like we've been talking about in today. And by the way, some of you were at the movie we showed last night, War Room. If you have not seen that movie, I want to encourage you to see that. We had about 60 or 70 people last night that showed up to watch it. But it is a great example of what we're talking about. And that's the reason we showed that movie last night, was to kind of begin this process of talking about what is a lasting legacy. And so let's get real specific. What are some nuts and bolts things that families can do, parents can do, kids can do, everybody in the family can do, that helps build a lasting legacy?
Well, okay, so here's maybe an example. So in Ephesians chapter 4, it says, in your anger, do not sin. Do not let the sun go down while you are still angry. Do not let the devil have a foothold. And if you're here, I'm assuming you're like, yeah, I agree with that. That's what we should do. That's the gospel thing to do. It's the Jesus thing to do. In your anger, do not sin. But the question is, if I'm leaving a legacy to my children, it's not just telling them, for instance, don't do that. Don't let anger take over your life. Or how do we do that? How do we actually become a person who does not let anger control us? For some of us, that might be easy. You're a very patient person. Anger isn't really the struggle. You have other struggles. But for some of us, anger is, our buttons get pushed, either by our children or by our coworkers or by our spouse, and we feel that anger building, and we know, hey, I'm not supposed to lose control here. I'm not supposed, you know, that's, but then how do I do that? What can I actually do? What are some realistic steps, things I can do to make this real in my life? So
it fascinates me how often there are some of us who can have really great successes in lots of areas of our life. You know, maybe we've built a business, or maybe we've moved our way up to supervising numerous employees or something like that. And so when people would see us in that role, they'd think, oh, well, you know, this person really is very calm and is very patient and really, you know, uses some great listening skills and so on and so forth. But then sometimes when we get into our own home and we're around those people who can rub us the most raw about particular things, then those abilities that we have over here, we have a little bit harder time translating them and using them in this place, like as Damon said in the sermon, that place where it's most important, that place where it matters the most. So for something like the issue of anger, we might think about it just like you would. Take those skills that you might have in your work setting. You know, if you were the supervisor in charge of systems at a hospital, you know, you were going to make sure that all the lighting and electrical, that all that were safe for the hundreds of people in that hospital. You would probably put that on a really important status in your mind. That'd be You know, you're thinking about that constantly. You're making plans for it. You're actually making a plan that it's going to break down, right? Mm-hmm. Like you're assuming that it's not going to work perfectly all the time. And in the same way, I think we have to assume that some anger and some frustration are going to happen in our family. That doesn't mean something's wrong. It just means we're people living together in a home. So to some degree, that's a normal thing. But I think we can fall into that trap of thinking, well, I should just know how to deal with that, or I should just do better. I should just be more determined, you know, take that sermon more literally and more seriously. And maybe if we'd put a plan in place, just like we would for the hospital, we might have a little more success. So that might look like, you know, I'm assuming if you were in charge of that hospital, you would only run your systems at, I don't know, maybe 80% capacity. You wouldn't run your electrical systems, and you wouldn't fill your hospital to 100-plus capacity all the time, and then expect that would never lead to any breakdown, never lead to any rub, never lead to any problems. You would back off and say, I've got to kind of anticipate that on wear and tear. I've got to kind of plan for that and have a backup generator and have a backup plan for what I do when this fails. So if we were to have something like that in our family, then we'd admit, yeah, anger is a sin that's kind of always crouching at my door. So one of the things I need to do is set up my life so that it's not so crammed full that just that one little last thing can push us over the edge. I just like Damon, I grew up in church also. And some of you may have experienced this. Maybe it's just us. We've talked about this. But we have both arrived in church well-dressed, looking really, you know, everyone's...
I mean, we look good.
Matt. Talking about when we're kids, you know, and we're everybody in the car's washed and the family, you know, everyone's shoes match and everything like that. But every single person in the car is mad by the time you get there at 9 o'clock because of what it took to do that. You know, this person couldn't find the shoe that went with this one, and this person was late, and that person was on their iPod, and they weren't even supposed to be on it at all. And you're yelling at them, but they got the earbuds in. And but yes, you might be able to get here, but at what cost?
Now, are you talking about when you were kids or with your kids? Which one was...
Well, we go to church at 5 in the evening, so we pretty well avoid that.
A little bit easier.
We start getting ready at 7 a.m. and just kind of, let's go.
It's a long process. I'm talking about some as our growing up years. Not all the time, but occasionally. And I think when I think back on that, I think that's because our family put the wrong thing on project status.
Yeah.
The thing on project status was get to church on time and look and put together. Where what I'd hope that we would put on project status, leave a legacy. This is how we talk to people. This is how you talk to people when you're stressed. This is how you talk to people when you're late. This Jesus thing doesn't just count when it's all working. It counts most when it's not working.
That's
and you're looking at the clock going, oh, we were supposed to leave 5 minutes ago. Well, that's when your plan really matters.
Yeah. So we kind of have to become aware of where our emotions are. It's one of those things where we have to be willing to see this is what I'm feeling right now, and to be honest about it. So, you know, some of us. I had a friend growing up who he's a youth minister. Whenever the only time I ever saw him angry was when he packed for a trip. He's trying to get a bunch of youth group kids in a van and pack it. That's the one time. And he eventually went to this age and said, look, I'm going to get a couple other people from the church to come up here and pack everybody, because what it's doing is we're getting ready to leave on a trip and everybody's excited about the trip, but by the time we leave, we all hate each other. And that's not what the gospel is. And so some of it is becoming aware of where we are emotionally. What, you know, do I feel, maybe I feel this way every day at kind of a similar time because I spent 8 hours since I ate. And maybe that's not the best time to do a lot of parenting when I'm feeling like that. And so, you know, it becomes, you know, it's awareness.
So to go back to that, the hospital analogy, I would assume that if you were the safety director at this hospital, you wouldn't wait to put your plan into action until, you know, smoke seeping from under doors and patients are running in the halls and lots of alarms. You're probably going to try to find those signals that something's going wrong as early on as you possibly can find them. You know, the very first indicator that one level of temperature is too high over here, or one smoke alarm in sector 3C is going off. Well, that's when you put attention to it. Mm-hmm. And so the same thing for us. Our body gives us these cues when that anger escalate is starting to happen, when we start to feel that. Most men tell me they feel it either in their stomach or in their shoulders and their neck. Women will often point to their chest or their head. But you've probably got somewhere, if you sat down and thought about it, there's probably one place in your body that you can go, yeah, when I'm starting to amp up, that's where I feel it. And I think that's a God-given warning system to you, that you don't have to wait till you're right in the middle of going, I have told y'all 600 times to get in the car. Right then, it's kind of hard to back it up, right? It's doable. You can do it. But it's a lot harder than if you notice it in those really early stages, like Damon was saying, have an awareness of it, and then a plan for how that's going to be dealt with.
And I think that's the key, is to have a plan in advance. Not, okay, when I get angry and I'm really feeling stressed, I'm going to do something about it different this time. No, you're not. You're going to do what you've always done because that's the pattern. But to break that pattern, you have to say, okay, I'm going to put a new plan into action. And so I feel that tension coming and I feel the stress. For me, it's always my hands. I start clenching. It's not that I'm going to punch you, but I'm really getting stressed. And in that moment to say, okay, what is happening to me? I'm going down the same path I typically go down. Now, I've got a plan for how I'm going to do this different. For instance, we have a plan between the two of us. So I'm going to demonstrate our plan. This is our plan. So if one of us...
I don't know if I know what this is.
Okay, here we go. So like if we are having a conversation, maybe let's say we're discussing the budget. So we're like, how do we spend $0? So we're talking about that. And I start, the stress of that moment starts to get to me. For whatever reason. It could be the topic. It could be I've just had a stressful day. I don't know why. But the stress of that moment starts to get to me. And I realize I'm starting to head down that path that typically ends with me doing or saying things that I regret. Well, I need to stop now. As the stress builds, I need to stop now. So we have agreed in advance. Now we've agreed in advance. We've agreed in advance at a time when we were not mad that if one of us says, I need to take a break, I need to stop, the other one immediately agrees. There's no, we got to finish. No, the second, so if Melody says, I can't do this right now, I need to, then I have, years ago, I already answered that question, which is, yes, okay. If you need to stop, then we need to stop. Our goal typically is, but maybe I was winning. Or, I had this great...
Law and logic.
I've got it. But instead to say, if I win, then we lose. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. If I win, then our relationship loses. So instead to say, oh, you need a break? I've already agreed to that. And what that allows us to do is to feel like you can say, because it's a plan in advance, I'm not having to jump in the moment and try to make it all stop. We've already agreed. And so that's a way, like for a couple, to kind of work through, that's a little tool, but to, when I'm feeling that stress, and it could be for whatever reasons. We were having a conversation one day, a great conversation. We were driving in the car, which is our favorite time to talk because the kids are all talking to one another. And so we were driving and we were going to Dallas. And we must have talked from, Baird to Fort Worth. And we're just talking, about important stuff. But then we get in Fort Worth. And suddenly there's cars everywhere. It's about 5:00. And I'm driving this van. And I've got a bunch of kids. And I'm starting to, but we're still having this important conversation. But I can feel all the stress starting on me. And finally, I just said, wait a minute. Hey, we need to finish this later. And she immediately said, okay. And the feeling of just the stress is wonderful. And so having things like that, sorry, you didn't know what we were going to do.
Okay. I know what we were going to do. But I'll tell you one other quick time when this saved our marriage a major, major fiasco. We call to it, it lives in infamy as the chicken fajita episode.
Yeah.
There was a time some years ago. See, Damon grew up with brothers. And I think in a brothers-oriented household, you just eat what you eat. If it's there, it's fair game and you just eat it. okay? But that's not how I grew up. I grew up where, you know, if you went somewhere, if you made some food or if you got some food and you put it in a box or something like your leftover, then that's your food, okay? That's just the way I came at this thing, okay? Then that's your food. So fast forward to us being married, and I've got a long, long day. I'm getting hungrier as the day goes on. Does that ever happen to you where you get hungrier as the day goes on and you start to think about what you're going to eat when you get home? And that you're just imagining it. It's going to be so good. Well, this day, it was leftover chicken fajitas. Okay? And it was going to be
really... It's from some restaurant.
I can't remember the name. It was at Armando's place.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So I was going to eat those chicken fajitas the second I got home. Okay? And I'm thinking about it all day long. And the day's getting longer and longer. I finally straggle into the house, put down my stuff. I can barely make it into the kitchen. And what do I see but the styrofoam box open, empty, except for a couple of little straggler onions. You know, that's all that's left. And he's eating my chicken fajitas.
They were good.
You know, right there. Just ate them. Okay. So that was a time when I chose, I was doing the thing how when you know your partner's mad, but you don't really know why yet, just from the way they're walking and the way they're, you know, I'm just opening up the refrigerator to see what's in there. And you know, I knew nothing good was going to be in there. And, you know, and I'm showing him non-verbally that I'm really, really mad. So he's a nice guy. He's going around, hey, what's wrong? What's the matter?
Something happened at work. I had no clue.
Yeah. And that was the time when I had to say, we're going to have to talk about this later. You know, he's got this deer in the headlights look like, what just happened? But I will say that after I ate something, I don't think we can talk about this until after I eat. And by the way, that's an important part of this technique. You can't just say, break, and then never come back to it, because that leads to this pileup of issues that never get dealt with. So in this case, at least, I said, break, and let's talk about it after I eat. Okay? So I make myself a sandwich, and while I'm eating it, I'm thinking, I am married to this man who's been at home with 6 kids all day long. They're well taken care of. They're happy. They're bathed, at least some of them. And in bed.
The ones that can bathe themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah, you do have a 15 or 14.
Right, exactly. So some good portion of them are bathed. The important stuff is right. And I'm really glad I didn't bite his head off about some stupid chicken fajitas. I don't think it's really that important. So being able to come back and, you know, and then say, I don't think there's anything left. As a matter of fact, there's nothing left for us to fight about. The research on that is about 80% of the time that's what happens. You take about 20 or 30 minutes at a minimum, and you just calm yourself down. And at the end of it, you go, oh, no, chicken fajitas really weren't as important as they seemed in that moment.
You're making me hungry.
No.
Sorry about that.
That was one of the things I was going to mention, too, in working with couples whenever we do the timeout thing as well. Mm-hmm. Is make sure you have a time to come back.
Right.
Say, you know, let's talk again in 30 minutes or after dinner,
exactly.
Or whatever.
And it's really important, I think, if you're typically the one who calls the timeout, for you to be the one to initiate that. And that's a hard bump to get over, because probably if you're the one that called the timeout, you don't want to go back to that. You know, you don't want to do it. But that's showing that you value that relationship. That's showing that you don't want the sun to go down on your anger, because you want to deal with it. You just want to make sure that you're at your absolute best to do it.
Now, let me switch gears just a bit.
Okay.
Let's talk about the single parents.
Okay.
What single parents, university kids, whatever, the people that don't have somebody else.
Okay.
What are some ways to leave a lasting legacy in that kind of situation? You talked a little bit about it this morning in your lesson about relationships, and that's important. Single parents, what do you do?
Well, I think that something like we were just talking about, trying to regulate your emotions, be aware of where you are and what pushes your buttons and how to deal with that, is important in all relationships. And it's especially important if you're... One of the things, so we have a rule, this is 20 seconds on marriage to get us to that. So we have a rule at our house between Melody and I, that only one of us can go crazy at a time. So
it's an unofficial rule, but only one of us can freak out at a time.
Right, so the other one has to, you know... But if you're alone with children, you don't have that option. Whether you're a single parent or you're just the parent who's there for a week while someone's out of town, or you're living with your roommate, it's just the two of you, and if you lose it, it's all on them. And so to find ways in our relationships to learn how to regulate our own emotions so that we can then especially as a single parent, then teach our children how to do that. One of the beautiful things is not just for an adult to call a timeout. One of the beautiful things is for children to watch us handle our emotions well and then move to teaching mode to teach them. Hey, you really got angry with your brother because you worked on your Legos for 4 hours and he knocked them down. And you went and punched him. And hey, I don't blame you. If somebody knocked down something I've been working on for 4 hours, I'd want to punch him too. But let's talk about now. What were you feeling there? Well, I was mad at him. Okay. Why were you mad? Because I worked so hard and he didn't care about it. So you're angry because he didn't seem to care about what you did. Yes, so you're helping them understand their feelings. That they're not just responding willy-nilly. They're helping them understand their feelings. And then over time, as they become aware of those things, you can help direct that in different ways. So, hey, you know, at a time when they're not as angry, hey, if your brother knocked that down again, now it's still going to make you angry, right? Mm-hmm. But what could you do different? What would you do different this time? Well, and usually they have a role, you know, this time I'd just kick him. Okay, no. How could you use your words to tell him what you're feeling? How could you, is this a place where you need to come get me so I can help you communicate what you're feeling?
Or if they've grown up watching you as a parent, take that time out. And I think those are so needed in single parents. They're so needed in every family. But when you double the pressures, you need them even more. When they have grown up seeing you take a time out when you're upset, they'll do it. They'll copy every single thing you do, right? They copy our twang. My son told me this morning he needed some milk because they copy everything that we do. So when they've seen, as a single parent, that you're willing to say, hey, I'm so upset right now that I'm going to go sit on the back porch for a few minutes. We'll talk about it when I'm done. Now, granted, when they're tiny, that's a hard thing. You sometimes have to take them with you on the timeout. A change of location almost always can break that trance. Your mind's kind of gone into a trance, and a change of location almost always can break it. So even if you just scoop them up and just go outside, take a few breaths, you know, whatever it is, leave the spilled stuff right in the middle of, right where it is, leave the broken glass, whatever it is, and go, okay, I can deal with that when I'm good. I can't deal with it when I'm a crazy person. And in this moment, I'm a crazy person, so I've got to get out. But I'd love to back up even just another step behind that. And this, I think, is something that the single parents in the university population and also those of us who are just in a different stage of life could all work together on a solution for that, is that we want to really be a community. Mm. When we back up from that and say, what's best for the single parent to not lose it in those moments is this amazing support system, yeah, where at 11 o'clock at night and her kid's got fever and she's out of Tylenol, she doesn't have the only choice I've got is to throw a screaming toddler into a cart at 11 o'clock and try to make it through Walgreens without me blowing up. I've got a different option. I've got a number that I can call and somebody will bring that to my house and pray for this baby and we'll move on and we'll be good. Yeah. I think that's a great answer. When mm-hmm. we have more of that, then those moments of losing it or near losing it become fewer and farther between, a little bit easier to deal with.
The importance of connection.
Absolutely.
Final thought.
Okay.
There's probably some people out here, including myself, that are going, that doesn't happen at my house. You know, the things that you guys are talking about. Or we've just totally messed up. We've blown it. We don't do a lot of that kind of stuff. What about those people? What can we do when we mess up? Or how can we make sure we stop messing up? What are your thoughts?
I think that, I think for church people, that's all of us, one of the most important things that we can do is to take grace home. That one, if you are married or you have kids or you're working with, for instance, you're taking care of your parents, so it's a different, but all these relationships, one of the most important things we can do is to be willing to say, I need your forgiveness. I need your forgiveness.
And then to be able to stop it there.
Yeah.
Because that's where I've gotten it wrong for many years. I need your forgiveness. I was wrong for yelling at you, but you knew that I was already upset and kept on spilling that orange juice while I was saying, put it down, put it down, put it down. So what did I do? I apologized and then insulted you as a part of it. So I think what Damon said is absolutely right. To be willing to say, I need your grace. I need your forgiveness for my part in this.
Yeah.
That's a complete sentence. There's a period at the end of that sentence.
And I think that the way our children or our roommate or whoever we're in relationship with learns grace best is by us being willing to forgive them, by us asking for forgiveness from them, and then the hardest one, and this is the one that we all have to do. If you're a parent or your spouse or whatever, this is the hard one. The grace to forgive yourself. To say, you know what? I did that wrong. I'm sorry. I yelled at you. It doesn't matter what you did. I shouldn't have yelled at you, son. And I want you to know, I'm asking for your forgiveness. Now, usually my kids will be like, it's okay, Daddy. You know? But then the question is, if I can't forgive myself, then that pattern's just going to repeat. Because that just adds a layer of stress. But the willingness to say, God's grace covers you, and it covers me. And I need your forgiveness, and I need to forgive myself. I think a great thing for a parent to do at the end of the day, instead of looking back, oh, I wish I had done this different, oh, I wish I had done that different, is to think, okay, God gave me the grace. One of the grace of kids, by the way, is that they live with you for years and years and years, which means if you mess it up one day, you got a bunch of days left to full of grace. You don't have to get it right in one shot. That's a grace thing that God has given us, and we need to have that grace for ourselves.
Real quickly, top three things. This is for the structure people out there.
Okay.
Top three things you need to do to build a lasting legacy in your family from each of you. They can't be the same.
Oh, okay. You're trying to make me go first.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's a dirty trick.
Don't eat the fajitas.
Well, if you go first, he can't repeat you.
Yeah. Ah, there you go. Okay, it's like Family Feud. Okay, so top three things you can do to leave a lasting legacy
in your family.
In your family, I think start with yourself would be one. To build spiritually and emotionally the resources you need to have in order to have an overflow to give to the people around you. We think of that in terms of finances, but we don't always think of it in terms of emotion and spirituality. So just to start with yourself. And then second, to make a plan. Just like if we were going to leave a financial legacy, that doesn't just accidentally happen. I don't know anyone who's just accidentally ended up with a $1 million endowment. You know, they had to back up and set specific steps and specific plans for how to make that happen. So we can do that. Take the goals that we have and break them down into daily steps. And then I guess the third one would be to love doing it, because we all do the things that we love. So to find joy in those moments where we're doing it, and that would just be that would keep us propelled in that direction because we'd love it.
Good. Now the challenge, three different ones. What would you say?
Okay, so I'm going to say, number one, be willing to laugh at yourself. I mess it up every day. And so just laugh. Oh, I did that wrong. I'm such a fool. It's okay. God's laughing with me, and he's going to help me. So laugh at yourself. Try to get where you can look at every moment as the moment that matters. We plan ahead so much, but the best thing today might be 5 minutes of sitting on the back porch with a 4-year-old as he talks about race cars. You can't plan that, but it's the best part of the day. And so learn to live in the moment. And I'd say the last one is keep no record of wrongs. As a matter of fact, if you want to keep a record, then write down, keep a record of rights. Keep a record of, these are all the times my kids did the right thing or my wife did the right thing. That totally changes how you view them.
Very good, very good. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
For being here and being so transparent and sharing your lives with us. Let me close this out with a prayer, and then we'll be dismissed. Father, we're thankful for the opportunity to be here today, and we pray that you will help us in our families to build a lasting legacy, especially a spiritual legacy of loving you. We're thankful for Damon and Melody being here and sharing from their lives and their experiences. Pray that you'll bless them and their family. We pray that you'll bless our family at Hillcrest. It's in Christ's name we pray. Amen. Appreciate everybody being here. If there's any donuts left, you're welcome to them to take them with you. So go out there in the back. Thank you.